Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the SFLC podcast. I want to thank our sponsors, Dependable Solutions, innovating the future of your small to medium-sized business since 2012. It's 2018. If you're not accepting credit cards, you're losing money. Plain and simple. Learn how you can save 40 to 60% on your overall credit card processing bill by going to dependable-solutions.net. Again, that is dependable/solutions.net. Also, teststrips.com. That is teststrips with a Z.com. Managing diabetes is your business. Making it affordable is ours. Sell your extra unused diabetes supplies for up to $50 per box and support a worthy cause. Rated a Better Business Bureau accredited A+ rating for over 5 years. Partnered with 98.5, the Sports Hub, and affiliated with the American Diabetes Association. Make sure to check them out again. That is teststrips with a Z.com.
SFLC Podcast.
All right, thanks for joining us, everybody. Welcome back to the SFLC podcast. I want to thank Jordan Griffin for joining us earlier today, signing his big UFC fight contract. We look forward to seeing what's in store for him. But we roll right along, and we are joined by one of our favorite co-hosts. You know him from Chicago, Illinois, Combat Preps, MyMMAnews.com. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Mike Pendleton. Mike, glad to have you back on with us, as always.
Yes, sir. Ready to go again.
And you mentioned we're ready to go right again, and allow me to take a moment to kind of blush for a moment, because we have a very, very accomplished fighter, coach, trainer, God, everything in MMA that you can be. He's been coach Mark Montoya. Mark, a pleasure having you on the show today, sir.
Hey, guys. I appreciate you having me. Looking forward to talking to each of you, and let's rock and roll.
Mark?
All right, Coach. Rock and roll has kind of been your thing all year. I'm wondering if Dana is paying you for the amount of fighters that you brought in during the Contender Series Season 2. What was the total number of fighters that you had signed for the UFC during Contender Series?
I had two fighters signed, actually. Yeah, I was on, my fighters were on the last two shows of the Contender Series for the U.S., and so I had two fighters get signed on Contender.
That is incredible. And I think you are the coach of one of the most rising, most popular guys in the UFC, and Anthony Lionheart Smith. Let me just ask you as his coach first. Do you ever tell him to put down Twitter when there's a fight or an opponent pulling out of a fight? Because this man is signing up for literally every single fight. Do you ever tell him, like, he needs to sit straight?
No, man. One of the reasons why I suggested he move up to 205 was that Anthony loves to just fight. And, you know, that's part of his DNA, and he does an amazing job. When it comes to that, the making 85 was a super tough cut. One of the worst cuts that I've been involved in over the last 20 years. And he was doing it, and he was getting the job done, and we had an amazing outcome at 85. We had one blip on the radar, but other than that, he was doing a great job. But I'll tell you what, the prep for that and the actual weight cut was no fun. So at 205, you know, he gives him an opportunity to just do what he loves, and that's to go out and fight and go out there and perform and go out there and shine and make money and take care of his family. And those are all the things that he's after. And so, you know, he, because of that, no, I encourage him to continue to go out there and just, let's fight, man. He, you know, he has an amazing fight coming up here in October. And I was told today that he was saying something about I'd step in short notice in September. And that's Anthony, man. I love it.
I gotta say that is also one of my favorite things about him. He always wants to fight. But I'm curious. I'll go back to what you said about that. The conversation you had to have. What was that conversation like? I know some fighters can be very stubborn when it comes to select things, but obviously weight cutting is that. It's a health thing. And I know when you guys were in town for just 225, and I talked to Anthony, he told me, man, this is just, I'm just so much healthier. But I'm curious, how was that initial conversation about him moving to 205?
Well, it's like any conversation I've had with any of my athletes. For example, I had the same conversation with James Krause, Zach Cummings, Brian Camozzi. Obviously, we're talking about Anthony Smith. So, it's the same conversation. I love that you have the will and the want and the need to cut the weight, but is the juice worth the squeeze? And that's the question, is it worth it? And, when we're sitting in Belém, Brazil, and we have no hot water because the hotel ran out of hot water, and they're trying to boil hot water on the stove, and we don't have a sauna because there just wasn't one for that venue. We had a head out sauna that the UFC provided, and steam rooms for some guys, they just can't use them, and they're just, they're not good at it, or they don't feel comfortable, they can't breathe, whatever the reasons are. The point is that we're sitting there for 12 hours trying to make weight, and he did it 100%, but is it really worth it? And so that's the whole question. And so when we look at, is this worth you guys doing? Can you go out there and perform? My answer most of the time is that these guys are cutting too much weight and their performance is affected. And, the kid, I've said this before, but the kid that I see 3 weeks pre the fight isn't the same kid I see in the cage, even on an amazing victory. They're not the same kid. They're compromised. So those are the conversations. Now, that's not a single conversation that's had because these guys are having success there. They're comfortable there. They like the sacrifice and process and, the whole thing. So this is a conversation that I've had to have with, the aforementioned guys that I already talked about. I've had to have those conversations with them more than once. And, at the end of the day, they have to trust my judgment, and they have to also trust the fact that they can go and get the job done. So I actually have that coming up here in next week with James Krause. He's fighting in Lincoln, Nebraska, against Warley Alves. And, Warley's a true 170-pounder, and James has fought at 170 pounds throughout his career. But it's just another test of, do I really belong there? And in my assumption, 100%, he's just a different guy in camp based on where he's at and not having, 12 weeks of trying to make weight in the last month being miserable.
Yeah, I completely understand that. It's kind of funny you mentioned everybody that I wanted to hit on with you anyways. We will be talking to James Krause on this show as well leading up to this fight. Do want to kind of sit with Anthony on the high chair here for a minute. But when we talk about, the guy you see in the cages and the same guy you see 3 weeks ago, now at 205, like when he had the beautiful knockout of Rashad Evans at 225 in his light heavyweight debut, were you like, this is exactly what I wanted to see? This is exactly what I had envisioned. Was that the guy you saw 3 weeks prior to the actual fight?
And it's not just in the cage. He was going out at 85 and doing an amazing job. He's knocking out Hector Lombard and Andrew Sanchez. And, he was doing an amazing job at 85. It wasn't like he wasn't. It's just that the build up to the fight, their personalities, the lack thereof, because they're just miserable, how much fun they're having or not. There's so many things that go into it. And then mentally, it almost puts them when they're cutting too much weight. It almost puts them to where when they finally make weight, they're just like, I'm done with this. And the fighting is not, they're not chomping at the bit to fight. They're like, oh, I finally made weight. And then, you know, the fighting is kind of like an aforementioned thing. And to me, it's got to be the other way around. I mean, I want them making weight for sure. That, you know, that's not an option. That's part of the job. But man, I want them chomping at the bit to get in the cage and having fun with the process. And if the process isn't fun, then what's the point of doing this? So that's why I have encouraged some of those guys to move up. Anthony absolutely has looked amazing there, but more importantly, throughout the process, he's having fun, and that's what it's about.
And Coach, you mentioned something about having fun in the process of all this, and I think that that's a phenomenal statement. But, you know, you ended up mentioning Anthony, and you mentioned James Krause. Obviously, you're working with Chris Camozzi. So in the aspect of fun, I do have to ask what it means when you end up saying X on the chest.
So Cortez Coleman, who I trained for a while, you know, obviously we have, you know, Factory X, we have shirts that have an X on them. And Cortez and I one day were talking about it, and we both were like, we got to go stamp that X on the chest, meaning, you know, go show them what we're about. And then it just kind of caught on. And, you know, with the gym, you know, you're proud to wear the X on your chest, and you're also proud to go stamp an X on your opponent's chest. So it's kind of twofold, but that's actually where that came from.
And all the fighters seem to really enjoy that process. You know, I mean, we see Anthony Smith definitely doing it. We saw Chris Camozzi in Glory Kickboxing. So when these fighters are able to do that, when they're able to say that, does it mean something more to them when they get that official X on the chest? Because it seems synonymous with victory or a win.
Yeah, well, I think it matters regardless whether they win or lose, because, you know, that's just part of the process, right? So, yeah, it matters. I mean, you know, one of the things that sets us apart is that we have an amazing group of athletes and coaches, and the team is that unity and bond. It's a real team. And, you know, the unity of having, quote unquote, X on the chest it means something to these kids, and to me too. And so, you know, it's a representation of what we've been through, who we are, and what we want to become. And that's, it's just a quick phrase that kind of sums all that up.
Well, I got one here for you. You've done amazing work with your young guys on Contender Series. You're giving advice on weight, you know, jumping up weight classes and trying to do better with keeping better care or taking care of your body. I just have to ask, when you talk about X on the chest, you talk about having fun. With all the turnaround that you've really given your guys and all the great success you've had in 2018, the million-dollar question, probably the hardest question you've ever heard in any interview ever, is if I came down to Colorado, could you help me stamp an X on someone's chest?
That's a good question. Yeah, absolutely. If you're willing to be committed, be consistent, and sacrifice a ton, yeah, we could. But honestly, that's the secret sauce, right? Or those three things. So my answer to you is absolutely, if you're willing to do that.
Don't buy into that. Don't buy into that, Mark. You would be working with like an ultra welter / atom weight if you were dealing with Mike Pendleton.
Oh boy. They come in all sizes.
They do. And I'm gonna let
you
go, Ryan.
They come in all sizes.
But I know, you know very well Rob Tatum from Combat Wrestling. He would work with you when you guys were just a very small gym. He said it was one of the greatest gyms, and he encouraged me if I could ever get out there to get some work in with you. The success speaks for itself. I got to ask, we talked about James Krause, we talked about Anthony Smith. Did Anthony want to fight James Krause when he heard that he was fighting in Lincoln, Nebraska, and Anthony Smith was not?
Well, I think Anthony Smith probably would have proposed to fight James Krause if he wouldn't have been given the Shogun opportunity. Short notice, right? So Yeah, Anthony Smith was lobbying hard to fight on the Lincoln, Nebraska card, and him and James Krause, I'm sure they'd both be down to fight each other if it paid right.
That's awesome. No, I just remember talking to Anthony back in June, and he had made it very clear that that was what he wanted. And I find it, I don't know if you guys, how often you guys talk about it, but he had like that Conor McGregor mythic max predictability. He told me he was going to knock out Rashad. Then he said he wanted either Ovince or Shogun. And then I said, wow, Shogun and Ovince, same crew. And he was like, yeah, those are easy fights. He goes, especially Shogun, I destroy him. Yeah, well, Anthony Smith strikes again. He did that as well. But I want to go to James Krause. What do you expect? When I talked to James in June, he had told me that he really is getting behind the coaching aspect of the fight game, and he really loves it. So what do we expect to see from James Krause, the fighter, next weekend?
Well, you know, number one, James is an amazing coach. You know, he enjoys the coaching process, and I'm really proud of him with all the success he's had with coaching. I like to think that some of that success has come from he and I getting an opportunity to spend time together as coach-athlete, and then him learning, you know, just some of the stuff that I've learned over time. He's really good. He's a super coachable kid, whether it's on the coaching side or as an athlete. So, first of all, any accolades he's getting on the coaching side is amazing. And, you know, being part of my lineage, I really love it and embrace it. But beyond that, James puts in the work, you know. So when it comes to being an athlete, you know, I encourage all of my guys that have the will and the want to coach to do it. And you know, on a weekly basis, I have sessions where my athletes that want to become coaches or are, you know, assistant coaches or want to have an internship or that kind of thing. We have those sessions weekly where, you know, the coaches are learning. I'm learning from them. They're learning from me. And, you know, we're just breeding more of that lineage like I talked about. So when James, for example, one of his advantages as an athlete and a fighter is that he has a coaching eye and that he embraces coaching. He's learning as a coach. He gets to see thousands of reps from athletes he trains, which makes you a better fighter and makes you a better coach. And, you know, when he steps in the cage, he's prepared. So, both physically and mentally. And so, you know, when it comes to James going in there as an athlete, he's obsessed just like I am with the whole process of just being great overall. And so, you know, when you get two minds like James and I together and we get an opportunity to continue to learn from each other and I get an opportunity to coach him up and put a game plan together and then watch him perform it in practice and then obviously go out there and do it in the UFC cage, then, you know, those are great. Those are great opportunities and great memories that we get to create. And, you know, he and I have been really successful together. I think we're 6-1, you know, together. And that includes the tough show he was on. If you exclude that, he and I are 4-0 together, in the octagon. And so, you know, the success is there, but it's been a ton of hard work. I mean, the kid comes to Denver from Kansas City. He's got a gym. He's got family, kids. You know, he's a coach. He sacrifices a lot to be here, and of course, so do I to get with him. You know, if we can't meet here, he met me in Vegas when I was out there for the Contender Series, so we could continue to train for this fight coming up. So, you know, you can't question his dedication. You can't question his preparation. And as a coach/athlete, the kid's ready, and you know, moving up to 170 pounds is something that I've encouraged him to do almost since the first time I met him, just like Anthony, you know, for example. But I'm looking forward to his fight. He's facing a tough kid. That's a tough fight. But I really look forward to watching James embrace that and go out there and showcasing what I already know he's got and letting the world know.
Coach, I love hearing stuff like that because we only have a few more questions for you. And I, again, appreciate you for taking the time with us. But, you know, you mentioned how you two learn from each other, and you even mentioned how iron sharpens iron. This is almost uncharted territory, because with the newness of this sport, it seems like the top coaches from this sport are former fighters. How special is that to you, that you're able to do this? And it's not like someone who walked out of the streets who, you know, was looking at metrics or numbers. You know, you had to go in there and experience it for yourself to then turn around and coach your athletes to success.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my philosophy, one of my philosophies in building the team that I have and continually growing the team that we have is that I feel like it's super important that I continually grow as a coach and get on the mat and train with my athletes and check my ego and learn, because if I stop learning, they stop learning. And so, you know, there are times when I get on the mat and I roll with them, or I flow spar with them, or I hold mitts, or whatever we're doing, wrestle with them, cage work, whatever, where I'm like, man, that looked good on paper, but that shit's not working. So we gotta evolve and adapt and figure out a way to do it. And yes, experience in the past helps. But the everyday process of wanting to be great and evolve and not let this game pass us up, but stay in front of the wave, is a big reason for our continued success, partly because that's my vision, but more importantly, because the guys buy into that vision. So, and you know, at first, back in the day, I was a much better striker than I was on the ground. And, you know, I had to check my ego and because, you know, I was going to get on the ground with my athletes. I'm their head coach. I'm a better striker, but I'm going to get on the ground. They're going to kick my ass. I had to check my ego and say, hold on a second. In order to be a good MMA coach, I got to figure all this out. So, I got on the ground and they kicked my ass for a while, and I started learning. I got obsessed with being, you know, what my goal is, and that's to be a great person and a great coach. And it's paid dividends, because, you know, my fighters never looked at me like, oh, he's not great in this aspect or that aspect. They looked at the fact that I was willing to learn and grow with them. And then I'm never complacent. And these are all the things that I'm asking them to be. So how can I ask them to be this if I'm not that? And so I embrace that grind just like they do daily, and it's something that has paid a lot of dividends over time and presently, and it will in the future. And that's the culture we've built, and that's the most important thing to me, is what kind of culture are we building? What kind of culture do I want? And we have to maintain, sustain, and then grow it. And that's the thing that we've been good at, but we can't be complacent. Because we've been successful with, we got to continue to be hungry, humble, and strive forward and stay in front of the wave.
Coach, I'm wondering, with all the success you've had this year, especially with, I'll use Anthony as the prime example, when you have a guy who jumped weight divisions, and we'll just take that out of the equation, but, you know, he's rising to the top. He really is. And he's right there.
Yeah.
I just thought that in a second. But how do you use, like, a path like Anthony, like he said at the press conference, he's probably got the most fights out of everybody up there. And I believe he was second behind Donald Cerrone. So how do you use a career like Anthony's to really help when you're coaching and mentoring these younger fighters, especially the two who made it onto Contender Series? Do you use Anthony as kind of like an example to help coach younger fighters?
Yeah, no, I use all the guys. I use, you know, for example, you're talking about Anthony. So I used Anthony, for example, recently, twice actually. And, you know, I told my entire team, you know, I have mat chats with my team on Monday evenings, Tuesday mornings, and then Friday night after we spar. And the thing that I told them pre him fighting Rashad and Shogun is I said, guys, Anthony has an opportunity to go change his life. And if he can seize that opportunity, then he'll get an opportunity to do that. And so, you know, after his fight, you know, with Rashad, for example, when I spoke to my team and we had a chat after practice, you know, one of the first things I said is, you guys get an opportunity to rub elbows with Anthony you guys put, you know, he puts his pants on the same way you do. He's not different than you. The point is, though, that you guys just witnessed the life change opportunity that he took full advantage of, and he changed his life in that fight. And then he had an opportunity to do it against Shogun. He did it again. And these kids are witnessing it and going, oh, wow, this is actually possible, because the guy that I get to train with, the guy that I get to speak with, the guy that comes and does the same stuff that I do, you know, he's making it happen. And so, you know, and it's with all these guys. It's, you know, it's James Krause, it's with Chris Camozzi, it's with, you know, Ian Heinisch, the Devontae Smith, who just won in the Contender Series. All those guys, you know, and you know, there's plenty more that I'm not even mentioning, but you, every time they step in there, it's a life-changing opportunity, whether they win or learn, right? Because the losing and the learning is a huge, huge, huge deal when it comes to their success. So they have to lose a lot, especially on the mat, in order to be successful. And sometimes they have to do that in the cage, unfortunately. I mean, I wish that never happened, but it does. And so, you know, that learning is all part of the process. And I'll tell you what, man, they're learning from a lot of success, and they're learning from some failure, and that's okay. I mean, those are great life lessons, because that's really what it's about, right? Is every time I sit down with an athlete first, I tell them my first goal is to watch you be a great person, help you become a great person. My second is to help you become a great fighter. And I truly mean that. And that's something that I believe.
I love it. I love it. I love your mindset. That's part of why, as I just tweeted out, which already got a reaction, that this was a bucket list interview for me, is because I could really tell that the great coach is not just for fighters, but for people as well. And I think you're both. But the wife told me to tell you hello, because she saw my tweet that we were doing an interview. So she wanted you to
She's funny. She's funny at that, right? I'll tell you what, she has been my rock, man. If it wasn't for her and her sacrifice and my kids' sacrifice, I wouldn't have an opportunity to do any of this, because I mean, my kids have grown up doing this, but, and so is she. I mean, she's been with me through the whole thing, but, she's been my rock for sure. And she's right. You guys see me, my fighters see me, a lot of other cities and countries see me a lot more than she does. So she puts that out on social media. It always makes me kind of chuckle, because it's somewhat true, but it is funny.
That's awesome. My last question, and it's a two part question here. I go back to Lionheart, and this is no disrespect to any of your fighters. Like I said, you've had great success this year, and I'm super happy for you and your team. So you have Anthony Smith fighting Volkanovski. I'm curious on how you feel going into that fight. That would be the first part. The second part is, do you believe with a win that Anthony is next in line for a title shot? And with that, I don't want to say it's a three-part question, but with Daniel Cormier fighting, supposed to be fighting Brock Lesnar, do you think it's time for the light heavyweight title to be up for grabs?
Yeah, all good questions. So, Anthony versus, you know, first question is Anthony versus Volkan. I look forward to that fight. You know, Anthony has had an opportunity to rise in the ranks quickly. You know, he went from unranked to number 9, and now he gets an opportunity to go fight the number 2 ranked opponent, and that's huge. I mean, that's why we do what we do, right? Is to go out there and get those options. So, I'm excited about that matchup. That's something that we like. We like the matchup, and taking nothing away from Volkan, he's a tough matchup. I mean, he's a tough kid, and he has a lot of obstacles that we need to overcome, but I'm confident in Anthony and his skills, and I know we can go out there and
he would be next in line. Do you feel he's next in line for a title shot? And I guess it kind of plays all into one question. Would he be next for a title shot? And do you believe that the title needs to be up for grabs with DC likely fighting Brock Lesnar early next year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if he's not going, if he doesn't want to, if he wants to take a money fight like Brock, which is a whole other conversation, because, you know, how does Brock come off a suspension, put himself in a title shot? Like, I get the money aspect. I understand it. And if my fighter's sitting in Cormier's shoes, I'm not bitching about it at all. That's a money fight. And that's one of the things you want, is to maximize your earning potential. So I get DC's point of view, but if he's not going to, if he is going to fight Brock and wants to go make that payday, man, great for him. That's awesome. I'm happy for him. But yeah, give that belt up and give these other guys standing in line an opportunity to go hold that around their waist and have the same type of success that DC's had with winning world titles and potentially winning multiple world titles in different weight classes. So he did it. He's accomplished it. If he doesn't want to fight at 205, give it up so these kids can go in there and wear that belt.
Outstanding. Coach, we really appreciate your time with us today. And, you know, we're not going to be too far removed from you, as we'll be talking to Mr. Krause here shortly. But we appreciate your time with us. And, you know, when we end up seeing you, where's the next time we're going to see you? Are you going to be in Brazil? I mean, we know we're going to see you in Nebraska. Man, you're going to be all over the place.
Okay. Yeah, next stop's Nebraska, and then there's a bunch of stuff coming up after that, of course. So I'll definitely run into you guys. Are you guys talking to Krause tonight?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we're going to talk to him in a little bit.
Krause is actually at my house picking on my French Bulldogs. You might want to talk to him about that.
We'll definitely do that.
Make sure you give him a hard time for me. You know, you can't give that kid enough grief.
You got it. Whatever you say, I will do. And then we'll see how much grief you can give me without killing me if I can make it down there to your gym. It's something I definitely would like to do. I've met a few coaches who have opened their doors for me. I'm not looking to actively become a fighter, but I definitely have gotten into training this year. But to be able to pick the mind of a great mind like yourself would be amazing. But I will definitely listen to you, and we will definitely give James Krause a hard time.
Okay, yeah, definitely. You know, when you decide to come to town, let me know. We'd love to train with you and open the doors for you. And then last thing is, what do you got? What's the over under on how many times James Krause combs his hair back in the middle of his fight next week?
2.5.
I'm going to say 4.
4?
I'll go with 2.5.
I'm saying higher.
Oh, wow.
But he is getting a haircut tomorrow. Say again?
You're saying higher than 4, and I absolutely love it. But a haircut, maybe the haircut holds me down, and I'll take that at 4.
He's getting a haircut tomorrow, so we'll see. I don't know if he's leaving the top long or not, but either way, I'm saying higher than 4.
Coach, maybe we'll make a friendly wager on that.
All right, let me know.
We'll do a push-up challenge. Right. So if it's less than 4.
Shut up with your push-up challenge. Shut up. Shut your mouth. No push-up
challenge. No, coach. If it's less than 4, you have to do 20 push-ups. If it's more than 4, Mike Pendleton has to do 40 push-ups.
I'm in.
All right. I can't say no to the coach. You got it. You've been incredibly gracious with your time, and I appreciate it so much. And you're always very, very courteous in getting back to me as well, so I really do appreciate it, and I wish you best of luck next week.
All right, and there we are. Mr. Pendleton, how do we think about that? You've got 40 push-ups you have to do with a specific thing that we will talk about with our next guest here momentarily.
When I tell you not to say something, I mean don't say something, all right? I'm not doing this, And now I'm going to have to make a side offer. I'm going to have to bribe our next guest so that I don't lose this bet. And then I'll be good.
And we'll get right into that said bet. We have now on the line with us Coach Montoya's protege for his upcoming fight in Lincoln, Nebraska, Mr. James Kraus, who we are very eager to see not only in the octagon, but also how many times he's going to pull his hair back and how short his hair is going to be for the upcoming fight. James, thanks for taking time with us tonight.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Now,
coach Mark Montoya said that if you push your hair back more than four times, I've got to do 40 push-ups. So if you do it less than four, he's got to do 20. I actually don't like that bet, and I didn't make it. My co-host did. So I don't know what I got to do to get you to agree to do it less than four times, but it would be greatly appreciated.
I actually think you're going to be okay this time because your hair is a lot shorter than usual, actually. So I only do it whenever my hair is longer and it touches my forehead. I don't realize I do it. We actually had this discussion today. It's funny you guys brought that up. Him and I had this discussion today about this. I don't even realize I do it. But yeah, it's when my hair touches my forehead. I don't like it. So I push it back, but my hair is super short right now. I don't know. You might be all right.
See, Mike. All
right. Well, I hope so. He also wanted us to ask you if you could leave his French bulldog alone.
Man, you tell that dog to leave me alone. That dog is a night terror to me when I stay over here.
You're at his house, and he asked if we could send the message to leave his dog alone. So we had to get that knocked out of the way.
Of course he would. I think that dog is like royalty in this house.
That's hilarious. Now, when we talked back in June, before you were coaching Megan Anderson at UFC 225, you told me that you felt like you really were coming on and loving the coaching aspect. You did tell me you still wanted to fight, which I loved to hear, obviously. And you had mentioned, and I didn't go Ariel Helwani on everyone, but you had mentioned that you were likely to fight at welterweight in your next fight. So with all that being said, pretty much everything you said came true for yourself. But I'm wondering now, from coaching, and I know you've done a lot of it over the summer, and now you have your fight, how do you feel going up to welterweight and getting back into the octagon?
I mean, I feel good. I'm sure Mark, if you ask me anything about Mark like this, about this question, he's going to say the exact same thing, but I feel like my quality of life is just so much better at this weight. It's not a big cut for me. I'm not huge at the weight class, but I'm not small either. I pretty much am at a point where I don't see myself going back to 55. It's just hard. I don't think I'm gonna have fun anymore, man. I got to a point where I feel like I either need to quit or go up and wait. And so I chose to go up and wait, but I just I wasn't having fun. My quality of life sucks. Like I said, I think you gotta have fun in this game, and you gotta want to come train. I think my intentional training is way better. I'm not just trying to get through workouts. I'm trying to get better through workouts. I think that's a huge part of it. So, we'll see. I'm fighting a real welterweight. He's a big dude. They all are. They're all good. They're all big. It's no sweat off my back, honestly. I really don't care. There's pluses and minuses to me coming up, and it's just going to be on me to make the adjustments necessary and grab the win.
I love it. Now, we did talk about that, and it's weird because you just said the same thing that Anthony Smith told me back in June about weight cutting, and we did just talk to your Mark Montoya about weight cutting and all that. And before I get into that, you guys always, in the times that we've talked about it, everyone's using quality of life, which is funny because when we talk about, or when a lot of people talk about weight cutting, everyone goes, well, they'll perform better at a better weight class. But what I'd like to point out for, you know, the simple-minded folks out there is that it's not just what you're doing inside the cage. You know, it's that quality of life. I'm sure you agree that you would rather have a better quality of life, you know, fighting at 170, going through a full training camp, trying to live your life, fighting at 170 compared to 155.
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. I mean, I think it depends on the weight cut. You know, you mentioned Anthony Smith. I mean, we were doing just like massive, ridiculous cuts. And for me, it's not the cut. It's the 2 months that it takes me to get to the cut. So I do agree in the sense of like, would I perform better at 55? Am I bigger there? Yeah, I'm bigger there for sure. I mean, I'm massive at 155. But I think whenever you get to a point where you're 3 weeks out, 3.5 weeks out, and you don't want to do anything, you don't even want to be in practice, that's a problem. You know, that's a problem. Whenever in my last fight, I felt, you know, like I won every round. Well, you know, arguably every round, two at least. You know, I felt like I won the fight for sure. And I was standing there, and I legitimately thought to myself, like, I really don't care if I win or lose this. I just want to go home. I want to be done with this. I'm exhausted from it. So whenever it gets to a point where it's no longer fun, that's not what I signed up for. You know what I mean? So when you don't want to go to work, man, you're not going to do a good job. That's the truth of it. You know, whether people like it or not, it is what it is. And if that means me going up the weight and giving up a little bit of strength or whatever to have some more intentional training sessions, then that's what it is. And on top of that, if I don't feel like I can hack it at 170, I'll quit. I'll just be done fighting. I'm okay with that. Like I legitimately am. Like I don't think that'll be an issue, but if I do feel like it is an issue, I'll just quit.
I really appreciate every time you and I have spoken because you've been so honest and so real where, you know, sometimes you know, people will hear that and go, oh, my God, no way. Like, it's the worst mindset. But in knowing you and the time I've known you, this is just James Krause. It's honest. It's authentic. It's real. And I absolutely love that. Now, I have a question about when I talked to Anthony Smith about his future back in June, he had mentioned – he didn't want anything more than fighting on this card. And like I brought up to Mark Montoya, Anthony wants to fight everyone, it seems. If you look at his Twitter feed, anytime there's a light heavyweight pulling out of a fight, he's ready to go. It doesn't matter what, when or where. So I'm wondering if, and I asked Mark Montoya this as well, did Anthony try to fight you when he found out you were fighting on the Lincoln card and he was not?
That dude tries to fight me every day. I mean, what you see is what you get with him. No, that dude, he's a psychopath, man. That dude would fight every weekend. I mean, and he should. Like, he's going into these fights not even getting hit. So why not? You know what I mean? Like, he's beaten some quality opponents with very little repercussions in terms of, you know, damage. Or he's knocking these dudes silly early, you know? So good for him. Whenever you win like that, you can do whatever the hell you want to do.
I love it. Now let's get into your actual fight. And I really do believe, you know, people say, certain fighters don't have the right mindset, or maybe, you know, their focus is. I believe that I don't know that I buy into that theory. And I believe, you know what's at stake in every fight. I remember talking to you when there was, you know, a conversation being had about you being on Tough Again, you know, and you didn't care. You didn't care what anyone else had to say. So going into this fight at welterweight, better quality of life for you, what do you expect out of yourself next weekend?
I mean, first of all, I'm gonna answer a question with another question. Like, who's the people saying that? You know, like look at the people saying those dudes don't know shit. You know, like I mean, who the hell knows me better than me? You know, and second, who knows me better than my coach that I'm with on a regular basis? These guys don't know shit. You know what I mean? That's the thing of it. And like in terms of my mindset, I have people say that I have a negative mindset because I'll quit if I don't feel like I can hack it. Look, this is the cream of the crop, man. I'm not gonna go. I'll say this: this game is not gonna decide whenever I quit. I'm gonna decide when I quit. So I'm not gonna quit because I get knocked out three times in a row and the UFC decides to cut me. That's not gonna happen. So, you know, for those people that say that, I mean, most of those guys are home with Cheeto stains on their hands right now. So I really don't concern myself with that type of opinion because they don't mean good to me. But to answer your question, I mean, I think this is a great test for me. I'm really looking forward to the challenge. If obviously we've spoke before, and it's I approach every fight with a different mindset and a real. I enjoy the challenge, and this is a really admirable opponent. You know, he's dangerous. He's got skills everywhere. He's got a phenomenal guillotine. Holds a win over the interim champ Colby Covington right now. I think it's a really good test for me. I'm really excited to get into this fight. I do think he's got some holes in his game. I think he's lost some fights that he actually, you know, that he actually won. I think he's got a couple good decisions thrown his way, but he's tough, man. He's tough. It's going to be a really good challenge for me. It's not an easy fight. That's for damn sure. But I'm not an easy fight for anybody either. So, you know, it's going to be me versus him, my coach versus his coach, you know, our skills versus his skills. And I like that. I like that. I really like that. And look, man, I openly welcome this challenge. I'm really looking forward to, you know, to facing him.
Well, I don't want to be one of the guys with Cheeto stains on my hands, so I'm going to make sure I wash my hands because definitely not me saying that. But that's why I love asking those questions because I get the real answer from you. You
wouldn't take financial advice from a homeless person.
Right, exactly. I love it. If this fight goes your way, hypothetically, really, how long do you see yourself continuing to fight? Because when I talked to you, I still saw James Krause the fighter, but I really felt and could see James Krause the coach. So how much longer do you want to keep fighting?
Man, so that's a good question. I think the game is going to tell me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm pretty real with myself in terms of what it takes to be at this level mentally, physically, emotionally. And if I feel like for one second that I lose any of those things, I have no problem, you know, being done and going to coaching full time. So I think the game is going to tell me. So I can't tell you exactly how much longer I have left because I don't know. But I don't see it being a ton longer, you know, I guess depending on that's all dependent on, you know, what your perception of longer is, I guess. I don't see myself being another like couple of years, if that. I just don't see it, man. Like I really, really enjoy coaching. I think I'm really good at it. I'm much better at it than I am fighting. And I think that's my calling. You know, I think coaching is my calling, not fighting. So, you know, we'll see. But like I said, I think the game is going to tell me, and I feel really good about that. So I don't have the answer you're probably looking for, but I don't see it being any longer than a couple more years. And I really don't know if I'm that long, if you want the truth.
The answer I'm always looking for, James, is the answer that you get. I don't ever shoot for a headline. You know, I take what you give me, and I make a story out of that. But I want to say this to everyone who will hear this. This is how you know James is truly passionate about coaching. Back in June, when we met before, he coached Megan Anderson. Very quickly, without hesitation, James invited me to come, he invited me to come down and learn from him in Kansas City, which I will take him up on hopefully by the end of this year. But that to me, and yes, you have a stable of fighters and you've done amazing work as a coach, but willing to coach a guy like me, and that shows me that, you know, you're not just in this sport, in this game for yourself. And not even saying that because it's about me. I could have heard you say that to five other people during UFC 225 fight week, and I would have said the same thing. But you said it straight to me. So I think really just your willingness to put coaching first shows just how truly passionate and dedicated you are to coaching.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's the truth. I am. You know, it's really, really enjoy it. It's something I'm very passionate about, and I really take a lot of pride in.
Now, you bring reality in every question and every answer that I have. So I have a little off the cuff, just away from your team and your fight and all that. You are going to be fighting in the welterweight division where, you know, the guy you're fighting, like you said, has a win over the interim champion, Colby Covington, who goes about the fight game way different. And I'm curious your take. And now he's not fighting Tyron Woodley. You know, Darren Till got the fight. That's a whole nother conversation because Darren Till missed weight in his last fight and quite controversial decision depending on who you ask. And now he's getting a title fight. What do you make of the top of the welterweight division? You've got a very animated Colby Covington, and then you have a guy who missed weight in his last fight getting a title shot.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the Covington. I mean, don't be fooled by his antics. He's walking the walk too. You know what I mean? He just, in my opinion, mauled RDA, which that is not easy to do. I think he's, you know, phenomenal fighter. And man, like, you just have to understand what's at stake here. This is not the fight game. This is the sports entertainment game. People want to pay to watch him get beat up. That's the thing. And he has pro wrestling experience. I know he knows he's good friends with some of the wrestlers in Florida. And I know a lot of those guys. I mean, I'm not, but I see a WWF promo whenever one's thrown at me. So I know he's kind of doing what Chael did. It's a slightly different approach, but man, he's getting talked about. You know, you're asking me about him. You know what I mean? You're not asking me about Kamaru Usman, who's at that top of that division as well. And as a matter of fact, he's the backup to that fight. So you're asking me about Covington before Usman. Usman's the backup to that championship fight. You know, so you're not talking about Usman because Usman doesn't say anything like that. You know what I mean? And that's his deal. Whatever. You know, everybody's got their own thing. But Covington, people want to see him fight. You know, they may not want to see him win, but who cares? They're buying tickets either way. And that's the sports entertainment. That's the sports entertainment industry. So in terms of Darren Till, man, it's pretty much the same answer again. They look at who do you have? You have Covington, you have Usman, and you have Till, right? Those are the three guys that are in line, if you will, for that shot. Am I missing anybody?
No, you got them all.
Okay, well, let's look at Covington. He didn't want that date, which is fine, man. Just because he's not missing out on anything, he's next in line. You know what I mean? He's not missing anything. He didn't want the date that he didn't get the date that he wanted. He'll get a different date. He's next in line. He's not gonna fight again. I mean, no way. I don't see it happening. But okay, so we'll scratch him from the list. Who else do we have?
Usman and
who else? Yeah, Usman. Dude, like, I love Usman. Usman's great, but if you compare Usman and Till, look at the ticket sales. It's not even close. It's not even close, bro. Till's an international star. He brings a different demographic to the table, and that's what the UFC wants right now. And it is what it is. You know what I mean? Like, that's why Usman is the backup on that. He's not as exciting. He's not as exciting of a fighter, and he doesn't sell as many tickets. That's just the brutal truth.
I feel like you just answered this, and I don't know if Ryan has anything else, but I have to ask this because we did ask Mark Montoya this as well. A little definitely relevant for him, you know, with being, you know, in there, and you're in there with Anthony Smith as well. So I am kind of curious your take. Basically, let's just call it money fight. Like I said, I know you kind of just answered this, but you look at 155, the division you fought in, and you look at 205, you know, where Anthony Smith, and heavyweight, really. And I'm talking the two money fights that everyone's focused on. You got Brock Lesnar coming out of nowhere, or really coming out of WWE, off a suspension to get a title shot. And then you have Conor McGregor attacking a butt in April, getting, you know, his court case settled and walking right into a title shot. Now, I know you're probably going to just say, you know, money talks, but I'm curious as a fighter, really, and as a coach as well, how you feel about these guys, these two guys specifically, walking in and just being handed title shots?
How do I feel about it? I mean, I have a saying that I like to tell my fighters, man. It's not what you deserve, it's what you earn. These guys are earning paychecks. And if you want the truth about it, if I'm DC, I don't want to fight Stipe again. Why the hell if I had Stipe and Lesnar as my options? Oh my God. I think Lesnar is an easy fight for DC. And he's going to bring a way bigger paycheck to DC. DC has earned that, in my opinion. He's earned that fight, in my opinion. Now, do I like the timing of it? No, man. Stipe, he deserves an immediate rematch if we want the real talk about it. He deserves that. But it's not about what you deserve. It's about what you earn. You know what I mean? It's not about that. It's something different. And that's what, when people say, well, Stipe deserves it. Yeah, I agree. He does. He absolutely does. No doubt he does. But Lesnar earned it. You know what I mean? Like, and I mean that in the sense of, or even DC, you can say. I mean that in the sense of financially. He's earned that. Like, he's a draw. He's made his name big enough to where when he says jump, the UFC says how high. And that's the same case with Conor. I mean, Conor's the champ, though. You know what I mean? Like, that's a little different. That's a little different story. Conor's not just walking into a title. He's defending the title.
But to being the champion, like, do you think, well, obviously, I feel like this answer is easily a no, but we didn't need the antics, and obviously, I care about the fighters who were affected on that bus, but we didn't need this to be one of the best fights in 2018. We didn't need this to be one of the the bus incident to hype this fight up. I'm curious as to how you feel about how it all went about, because you had Dana White, saying this is the worst day in UFC history. Even throwing out there, I don't know if Conor's on drugs. And I like that you said, he is defending himself because he was just stripped of it. He never lost it. But this fight would have been A-okay without the bus incident. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I don't think that was staged. I don't think that was a part of the sales at all. I think Conor's just a psychopath, bro. Like, I mean, I don't think that was any. I don't think that was anything sales related at all. I don't. I really don't. I think Conor's just a. It's just how he is, man. Like, I mean, I truly believe that. You know, like, dude, there's the saying. You can take the boy out of the hood, but you can't take the hood out of the boy. I don't know if he's from the hood or whatever, but from what I know of him, that's how he was. That's how he is. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, what are you gonna do? Money's not gonna change your personality for the most part. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I think he just did it because these guys ran up on his boy and he's like, forget that. I'm getting mine now. You know, I would have probably done the same. I don't know if I would have threw a dolly through a bus, but I definitely would have. There would have been problems when I got there. If you surround my dude, surround my dude and slap him and stuff.
Absolutely. Well, I've got one more here for you, kind of just on the landscape of the UFC, and then I'll go back to you for one more. But you were part of that whole TJ Dillashaw, Cody Garbrandt beef on Fox, and I'm just kind of curious, we've seen him fight twice now. Are you surprised that TJ in two fights took care of Cody inside a total of three rounds?
I'm really not. TJ, man, Cody's good. I like Cody. But TJ is – he will not be outworked, and he is one of the best fighters in the game right now. I think he might be one of the best, if not the best striker in the game right now. His stance switching, he's got great power. Dude, he's just one of the most complete fighters. He really is. And I like Cody a lot. Cody is right there. You know what I mean? Like, Cody's right there, and he definitely can win that fight, but I'm not surprised that TJ bested him twice. I'm just not. TJ's phenomenal, man. He really is. Regardless of what anybody thinks about him, he is, in my opinion, one of the best, if not the best fighters out right now.
Well, I asked all of that because it leads me to this question. When will we see you? Obviously, we'll see you inside the octagon. On FS1. When will we see you back on the analyst desk on FS1? I saw a lot of people complimenting you when you made your FS1 debut. I think you did a hell of a job as an analyst. Is that something you really want to do as well outside of coaching? Because I feel they kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's something I really, I thoroughly enjoy doing. I'm at a point right now where it's really difficult because I'm coaching so much. So I travel almost every weekend. I mean, I've been home 2 weekends in the past 3 months. So it's really, it's not easy for me to do that type of stuff. So I need a lot of notice. And unfortunately, it's kind of difficult to, those guys, like, they, I mean, you pretty much have to be on their time, you know? So, it's tough to do that right now. Maybe when my schedule calms down a little bit more, I'll be able to commit a little bit more to it. But I don't think right now is the best timing for me on it.
Well, James, you've been more than gracious with your time as always, and I really do appreciate it. I want to wish you the best of luck on in Nebraska. It's going to be a great fight. Excited to see not only what your fighting future holds, but your coaching future holds. And I will make my way down to Kansas City, when your schedule allows it, and definitely looking forward to your fight, and I just want to thank you again.
Hey, appreciate it, bro.
All right, and we look forward to seeing James Krause in the octagon at UFC Lincoln coming up. And just like that, Mike, that was a that was an action-packed show. You kind of hit the nail on the head with that one.
Yeah, I figured, no better time to talk to two guys, who not only have had a lot of success in 2018, but have also, we'll see them both in Lincoln, Nebraska this weekend. So this weekend. I'm an idiot. But yes, this weekend. I'm super excited for it. Excited to see James Krause. Like I just said, I am going to call him Fire Emoji James, Fire Emoji Krause, Fire Emoji, because that is the only way you need to address that man after the interview we just had, spitting straight fire on everything that we talked to him about. And honestly, it's kind of refreshing, right? Like, it's refreshing to hear Krause or somebody, just be real. How many people just hate Colby Covington because he's Colby Covington? How many people would say, hey, Darren Till's an international star. I love Kamaru Usman, but this is the reality about Darren Till. He's right. Every single thing that James Krause talked about, he didn't hold back on. And we always look for certain things when we talk to fighters getting up to their fight. You know what? James Krause's real attitude and personality is what makes his fight so much fun this upcoming weekend.
And, you are definitely right in that, because, Mike, I think we maybe spent a minute or two on the actual fight he has this weekend. Everything else was his take on the fight game. And to me, that's more important. The longevity of that is much more important than the upcoming fight he has. Because guess what? After this weekend, he has another fight coming up, in an unforeseeable time. What, 3 months, 4 months? So you're right. We could talk about one fight, but let's talk about the fighter instead and see how he adapts as that professional fighter.
Yeah, and I just want to go on record, and I'll speak for myself here. Don't listen to this interview and don't hear James Krause, who knows if I fight. Like you said, you have Cheeto stains on your fingers in judging him and his career. Like he said also, don't take financial advice from a homeless man. I would caution those that listen to this and want to judge James Krause before he steps into the octagon. I think you're going to do yourself a huge disservice. And I think James' time as a coach is only going to help him in his fight in Lincoln, Nebraska.
I think that's the best way to look at it, because like we mentioned earlier with Coach Montoya, the fact that these two polish each other makes both of them much more phenomenal for this sport in the long run.
Absolutely, my man.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mike, that was an action-packed episode. We look forward to seeing what happens with James Krause and Coach Montoya moving forward ahead of UFC Fight Night in Lincoln, Nebraska this weekend. But I think that's going to do it for you and I. So be sure to keep a lookout for these interviews and the subsequent articles that are going to be turned in because of these articles. But Mike, I'm going to let you go because I know that time is of the essence. But we look forward to talking to you here in the next week and kind of recap not just this fight, but everything else with Justin Gaethje and Vic. And then, of course, we have Michael Johnson and Andre Feely. A lot to discuss coming up, my friend.
Yeah, we have a lot of great stuff, and I'm looking forward to it, my man.
All right. On behalf of Mike Pendleton, I'm Ryan Sprague of the SFLC podcast. Enjoy the fights this weekend, everybody. We know we